It's time for everyone's favorite podcast on the web. Pivot off the wall. Where you get the best sports talk and info in New York.
You lollygag the ball around the infield. You lollygag your way down to first. You lollygag in and out of the dugout. You know what that makes you, Larry?
Lollygag.
Lollygaggers. What's our record, Larry?
8-16.
8-16. How'd we ever win 8?
It's a miracle.
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
It's an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. And here's your host, Chris Sheeran.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. The Off the Wall podcast is brought to you by DirecTV. Don't just watch TV. DirecTV, call 1-800-DIRECTV. It is Chris Sheeran. It is Joe Auriemma, and we are going to recap, relive, revisit what we did down in the great state of Florida in Tampa and the surrounding area. We went to Gainesville. We went to Orlando. We'll get into that in just a sec. But first, what we saw in Tampa and who we talked to in Tampa. We went down there, Joe, with a plan. We wanted to talk to 30 guys, and according to my spreadsheet, I think we got 19 of those said 30 hopefuls. You might have got a couple more. I have to look. Actually, you did. You got Carrig, who we didn't get, but when I was down there, Mark Carrig of the Star Ledger, the Newark Star Ledger, at Ledger underscore Yankees on Twitter. But I think we had a very, very productive trip. We talked to a lot of players. We got a lot of information. I taught Curtis Granderson had a hit, apparently, and it's made its way up here to Stanford. It's just a matter of time before that hits YouTube. I'm sure everybody will see it before, you know, this year is through. So good stuff all around. I thought the most, if someone were to ask me, I'll ask myself what the most eye-popping thing at spring training was for me. I have to say, Manny Bañuelos. This kid was 19 when he faced the Red Sox the first time that I saw him at the Boss, Steinbrenner Field. And, you know, I talked to Joe Girardi about him. He said we have to temper the excitement, of course, but what he's able to be doing, it's not proper English, but you know what I'm trying to say. What he's able to do, Girardi said, here with us at spring training so far, and at that point it was only three innings, but Girardi said it was shocking. So if the manager of the Yankees says a 19-year-old kid who came highly touted from Pinstripes Plus and our good buddy Patrick Teal there, he told me about this kid 2 years ago when he was 18 going on 19. He is now 20 years old. He turned 20 on Sunday and started against the Red Sox earlier this week and didn't allow a run. Got into a couple of pickles but got himself out of trouble. Loaded the bases. He's walked four all spring. Three of them came in the 2 2/3 he faced the Red Sox. But the good news is he was able to get out of trouble without allowing a run. But, Joe, to me, to see a kid with the mound presence that he has as a 19/20-year-old this spring training with the Yankees, going up the last time against the Red Sox A lineup and featuring a fastball from 93-96 and a changeup from 80-82, you know, he made Euculus look silly with a changeup. He made Jason Varitek in his first outing against the Red Sox look silly. I mean, and he had a fastball, curveball, and a change to set Varitek up to strike him out. You were there, too, in his first outing against the Red Sox. Just give me your impressions about Manny Bañuelos so far this spring.
Well, the one thing I noticed from Bañuelos is that he's a polished 19-year-old. It's amazing the movement that he has on his pitches. He's just got a nasty selection of pitches. That changeup is sick. He's got a dart, a gun for an arm. You know, it's unlike anything you see coming from a young pitcher as himself. And, you know, we heard all the comparisons. We heard Johan Santana. We've heard everything from everybody down there. Again, you got to temper your excitement, But the one thing that you really have to like from this kid is that, yes, he did get in and out of trouble. That's one thing. It seems like he can handle the pressure of facing a number one lineup. And the other thing is that, you know, he's already pitched. What people don't understand is, you know, Jim Cott always used to tell me, I think a minor league pitcher is ready to go in the majors when he's thrown 250 to 300 innings in the minor leagues. That was always his theory. And he's thrown 215 minor league innings. So, you know, as much as people want to say that, you know, he's very young yet and he's almost there, you know, he's creeping up on that plateau. He's been in the minor leagues a long time for a 19-year-old. And, you know, when a pitcher has it, he has it. And maybe it's, you know, I'm not saying this year, but we might see him at some point this year. That's what I'm saying. We might.
I completely agree with you. And, you know, going into spring training, I wrote a blog about these, you know, they're Pinstripes Plus calls them the killer bees. And I'm not going to kill my buddy Patrick Teal for saying killer bees. But listen, until they do something in the majors, could we stick to what I dub them as? And that's the could bees. Banuelos. I got that pronunciation, by the way, from the Yankees PR people. I thought it was Banuelos too, but it's Banuelos. Dellin Betances and Andrew Brackman. Look, the pedestal these guys could reach is just so high. I mean, everybody we talk to, the beat writers, scouts down there, Patrick, from what he's told me, these kids have got it. They've just got to form it. And as Joey said, Banuelos, if you were to picture him as a big mound of clay, he's almost in the kiln. He's almost ready to go. And I know a lot of people on Twitter, when I wrote this blog, said, oh, well, we'll never see the killer bees this year. They're not going to be ready because, you know, everybody on Twitter knows everything about the Yankees, by the way. Let's face it. You want news, just, you know, go to the fans because they know everything. Trust me. I'm going to get killed for that. But, you know, it's the truth. We relax. This is the whole thing. This is my whole point with, you know, already anointing the Red Sox and Phillies as the World Series matchup. Can they get on the diamond? Could they play before we anoint someone? If you look on paper, sure, I can't argue. The Phillies have arguably one of the best pitching staffs ever. I mean, you have Roy Halladay is a number one. Roy Oswalt's a number one. Cliff Lee is a number one. I won't go as far as to say Hamels is still a number one, but you could say that. If you put Hamels on the Astros, he could be a number one. He could be. But you have four number one starters on one freaking rotation. Country Joe Blanton, you're left out. I'm sorry, but, you know, when you put yourself next to those four guys. So you have four ones and a five.
And he's not even a five. He's a three.
And he's a three. Absolutely right. So, yeah, if you want to look on paper and put two teams in the World Series, I can't argue if you want to put the Red Sox and Phillies in there. But could you just wait? Could we play the games? The Yankees have pretty much the same lineup as last year, and you have a healthy Brett Gardner. And let's not forget about the bench, Joe. This is another thing we have to talk about because Joe Girardi, as I go off on caffeine-induced tangents left and right, Joe Girardi was old Mother Hubbard the past 3 years. Now, I'm just off the top of my head. Eric Hinsky was a great bench player for Girardi. Had some pop, could play various positions on the field. But other than, like, Ramiro Paint, I mean, it was just slim pickings on the bench.
Marcus Thames, he was
good. Marcus Thames was good as well.
And
Jerry Hairston Jr. Can't forget him. But let's look at the bench, how it could be aligned this year. Nunez or Pena as your infielder, your backup infielder. And they like Nunez because of his bat, the pop. Both can play the field. Your fourth outfielder is Andrew Jones. Your corner infield backup is Eric Chavez. You know how many gold gloves these guys have? And you know how much pop? You know, Jones is, he's on the back nine. I'll give you that.
Did hit 21 home runs last year. Just throwing that at you, too.
He is on the back nine, though.
Yes.
But he did hit 21 home runs, as Joe said. Joe Girardi is not old Mother Hubbard anymore. There is plenty of pop in that cupboard. And you keep these guys healthy, the lineup is even better than it was last year. And last year's lineup, in case you forgot, made it to the ALCS. Okay? And A.J. Burnett had a rotten year, and they made it to the ALCS. Let's not anoint the Red Sox just yet. And there are people out there who probably might be saying, oh, he's just drinking the Kool-Aid. You know, he works for the Yankees, yada, blah, blah. No, I'm a realist. I don't give teams championships before they step on the freaking field. Okay? I let it play out a little bit. And I don't judge my team after April. I don't judge my team after May. I ride this out. It's 6 months. It's 162 freaking games. Okay? That's all I'm saying. The bench is better. Do we have to figure out the back end of the rotation? Sure. No one wants to give up that job either, Joe.
Well, and that's, Chris, that's where I was going next. I mean, and as you said, after you guys left that first wave, I also interviewed Andrew Jones, so check that out on the website. he was, you know, talking about, you know, being a Yankee. I interviewed Sergio Mitre. I talked to Flaherty. I talked to, you know, Kevin Kiernan, Pete Caldera, Mark Carrig. All, you know, all these interviews were tremendous, talking about the team. And one common theme, even from Sergio Mitre, was, you know, the fourth and fifth spot in the rotation. And one thing I'm going to say is Bartolo Colon is making it very, very hard for them to say, well, it's just going to be Freddy Garcia and Ivan Nova. Very hard. Because he just pitched a simulated game, you know, earlier this week. And he did great. Again, everybody's seeing it. He's got late movement on his fastball. He just looks, even though, like I said, he, you know, he's not the most in shape pitcher. Right now, he looks great, and the coaching staff is having a real hard time with this decision, and it's going to come down to this last week here.
And it helped that he pitched in winter ball as well. He was ahead of the curve coming in. Garcia was 12-6 last year with the White Sox, and you know he had his last year under his belt. Colon didn't pitch in the league last year. So there's a lot of ups and downs to these guys, but you're right. Colon is making it very hard. I talked to someone very close to the situation down there, and you know, there's some whispers like, well, how long do we actually need this guy? I mean, we could use him for 2 months, and then a trade could come along, or one of these kids could be ready. So just because someone gets locked into the fourth or fifth spot in this rotation doesn't mean they're going to be there all season. You know, Brian Cashman has surprised us before. He has. So what's to say there isn't a trade in the future? I'm not saying there is one. I don't know of one, but it wouldn't shock me. But I think from everybody I talk to down there, and this is not just his teammates. This is beat reporters. This is, yes, colleagues. From what they're seeing in A.J. Burnett, because you just can't take, you can't take what his teammates say, because what are his teammates going to say? He's going to stink again. And his pitching coach, who we talked to, and he said he sees a difference already. Now, look, y'all know, spring training, it takes a while for the batters to catch up to the pitchers because the pitchers and catchers report first. Batters are starting to catch up, and A.J. Burnett still looks pretty damn good. I know it's still spring training, but everyone I talk to thinks he's going to have a better year this year, and I know you talked to Mark Carrig about it as well.
Yeah, and the one thing I said to Carrig is that, you know, the other day when he pitched against the Nationals. Now, Chris, you and I both saw the Nationals. Do you remember one thing you remember from batting practice with the Nationals? What do you remember?
Michael Morse was hitting bombs left and right.
Now, this guy was, I mean, he hit one to deep center that hit the top of the black, hit one to left that just completely cleared the left field fence.
And he looks just like Jason Wirth. I mean, he has the same kind of body build, and he had the beard work, and I think he wants to be Wirth, actually.
And this spring, he's hitting almost 500. And he's also got 5 home runs. So A.J. Burnett was pitching well, and guess what? He ran into Michael Morse, who hit a bomb off of him. But like Carrig said, you know, last year, that setback would have mentally just completely gotten to Burnett, and he would have just blown up. But he said everybody wanted to see what his reaction was after that.
Let's see how he reacts.
And he reacted pretty well after that. So, you know, it was a concern when he gave up the home run, but then he pitched well. But again, he ran into a buzzsaw like Michael Morse right now.
He did, and that's going to happen. You know, and it's not as important as the home run isn't important as what you said with Mark is the fact that how he reacted to that. And he rebounded, and he only gave up the 2 runs on the 2-run shot. And he's had a great spring, and good for A.J. Burnett. You know, he was quoted down there right after we got down there. He was quoted as saying, "I'm here to shut some mouths up this year." That's the attitude you want out of a starting pitcher. And that's the attitude this guy's always had. Okay? He's always been like that. He ran into a bit of a rough patch last year. It was an odd season for A.J. Burnett. There's no way that's going to happen again. I just feel it. I feel it in every fiber of my being, in my bones, in my soul, that A.J. Burnett is going to have a turnaround season. And if that happens, and CCCC, and Phil Hughes can give you, you know, I know he gave you 18 wins last year. You can't expect Phil Hughes to have 18 wins again. But even if he gives 15 wins, if Phil Hughes is a 15-game winner and you have CC and AJ being CC and AJ, listen, if Nova gives you 10 to 12 and your 5 gives you 10 to 12, I got news for you. You're in the playoffs. You're in the playoffs. You might not be the division winner. And I know the AL East is tougher, and they're saying, well, if the AL East keeps beating the hell out of each other like the Big East did in basketball this year, and we'll get to basketball in our next segment really quick, but if the AL East beats the hell out of each other, the wild card's going to come out of the Central or the West. And Joe is over here making a face like, no way. Who's going to be? The Indians? The Royals? Tigers, White Sox, Twins. I don't know. Maybe the A's have a shot in the West.
A's have no offense. Just throwing that out there.
Come on, Hideki.
A's have no offense. And their pitching staff might be good, but, you know, they're everybody's Cinderella team right now. It's amazing. The Rangers got worse. You know what? The Tigers are a little sneaky. Okay, I'll give you the Tigers. I'm not a huge White Sox fan. And the Twins are the Twins. What are the Twins going to give you? They're going to give you all they got. Morneau's still not back. I mean, he's still kind of iffy. You know, it's. I think it's up for grabs.
The common denominator to the first segment of the Off the Wall podcast, I believe you could probably read through the lines in what Joe and I are trying to say. Do not anoint anyone champion just yet. Okay? And that doesn't mean we think the Yankees are going to win the World Series, but do not count them out. That's what we're saying.
What we're also saying is we hope you enjoyed the videos that we shot for 2 weeks, and also you can continue to watch them at yesnetwork.com. We also have some features coming up. Everything really went swimmingly. You know, I know you said 19, but I think we actually overall got 25 to 30 guys, so we kind of hit the mark, and we did something different this year too. We did storylines. We did spring spotlights, which we hadn't really done last year, where BPs, bullpens, behind the scenes, pitchers. It was a different feel, and I think you know, Kenny G in the cage. I thought that was kind of funny. But that is actually, right now, I think our number one video from spring training, if you can believe it.
And it's also featured on Cheap Pop, Lance Becker's blog. You want to check that out on yesnetwork.com. That's a new one. But anyway, and listen, we love our listeners, and I love my people on Twitter. So let's not read too into what I said way back when I said you guys know everything about the Yankees. All I, you know, I'm just jabbing at you guys. It's all in fun. And, you know, the season, if you're not a member of Twitter and you're listening to the podcast, you have to. Because during a Yankee game, the hilarity and hijinks that go on Twitter during a Yankee game from pitch to inning, game to game, it's entertainment, man. You don't know what you're missing. It really is. It's better. It should be. I mean, we could have a show on television better than any sitcom that could be written, because there are a lot of people on Twitter who are very funny, and come up with some outlandish stuff that makes me roll on the floor laughing. That's R-O-F-L.
No, R-O-T-F-L.
R-O-T-F-L, yeah, sorry. Again, me with the English. But anyway, I just wanted to make sure that you guys know that I appreciate the follows and I appreciate the comments during the season, during the games. All I just get a kick out of, and I make fun of you guys because, you know, the Yankees go 2-3 in their first five games, and you guys are on a ledge. Oh, baby. Only Yankee fans on Twitter with 157 games left on the schedule are on the GWB about to press the phone. You know, life is worth living. Come on, guys. Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait till five games in. It's one of the best parts of this job. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to talk a little NCAA tournament. I just filled out my brackets. I did two of them. I have two different Final Fours, so I'll give you my picks when we come back, and I'm sure Joe will as well. That's next on the Off the Wall podcast, brought to you by DirecTV. Don't just watch TV, DirecTV. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. We're back right after this.
Want to see what everyone's talking about? Check out the two-time Emmy Award-winning video content at yesnetwork.com. It's the best in Yankees web shows, podcasts, and features. Only at yesnetwork.com.
It's Off the Wall on yesnetwork.com. Here's more from Chris Sheeran.
Welcome back, everyone. The madness is upon us. Not just the Off the Wall podcast, which is brought to you by DirecTV. Don't just watch TV, DirecTV. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Opulence. I has it. Anyway.
Before we get on a tangent on the NCAA tournament, I just want to lay down the law here just a little bit. To everybody out there that doubted Jacques Lemaire and the New Jersey Devils, 28 games, last 28 games, 23-3-2, 6 points behind the Buffalo Sabres. 69 games in, they have a game in hand on Buffalo and Carolina, the two teams ahead of them. Just saying.
Well, here's what I hope, and I'm a Ranger fan, okay? I hope the Sharks stay in the seventh seed, and I'm praying to Jesus that the Devils get the eighth seed. Because if the Devils get that eighth seed, the city of Philly is going to start, they're going to break out to a cold sweat, baby. And that's something that I can't wait for.
The city of Philly is breaking out in a cold sweat already because they're actually only a couple points ahead of the Washington Capitals right now. And you know what that means? The Caps, who have won, what, 8-9 in a row now? The Devils can knock off either of those teams.
They absolutely could. So, you know, this... and then, listen... If he wasn't bronzed already, if they get in the playoffs and win a first-round series over the Flyers or the Capitals, who could be the one or the two, Jacques Lemaire should be bronzed.
I know. I think if... Look.
But then what happens to John McClain, by the way? Because they were making him out to be a scapegoat. I don't know. You're a little closer to that than me, but go ahead. Your thoughts.
Lou Lamoriello, I'm pleading with you. If Jacques Lemaire turns this team all the way around to where they were at the bottom of the conference.
Joey, they had 5 points. They had 5 points through the first month and a half of the season.
If Jacques Lemaire does this, I'm just saying, sit Jacques down, say, listen, here's a blank check. If you sign this dotted line, we will give you whatever you want for the rest of your life.
I don't know. It has to be one of the greatest comebacks in NHL history if they get into the playoffs. Now look, they're only 6 points out. They had a couple of bad losses. They lost to Ottawa, and that was a bad loss. But 23-3-2, that's unbelievable. And you know what? Not to be corny, they're raising hell right now. Oh baby, the Devils are raising hell. Anyway, yeah, that'd be very interesting to see if the Devils could get that 8 seed and take on the Flyers in the first round. That would be a very interesting series, and I guarantee it would go 7 games, and they would take as much of the Flyers as they could out of that series if they didn't win. But I truly believe that the Devils could beat the Flyers in that first round, and the Flyers would be doo-dooing in their gotchies.
All I know is my cousins in Bucks County, Pennsylvania.
Oh, God, here we go.
To you guys, to Nikki Picari, I'm naming names, baby. To Anthony Picari, to all you Flyers fans at the beginning of the year who were saying to me, Joe, Devils stink. Devils stink. Well, you know what? I got a text from him last week. This is one hell of a comeback. I just hope they don't make the playoffs. Oh, why is that, Nikki? Why is that? Well, is that because you're a little scared? Your Flyers a little scared?
Devils are coming, and they're bringing hell with them. All right, I'm done. That's it. Last one. Let's move on to the NCAA tournament here. And, Joe, I got to tell you, the first play-in game, which happened earlier this week, if this tournament, and I'm sure people will be listening to this, you know, first, second, third rounds past that, you know, because you get this on iTunes as well. I don't know why I'm saying that, because if you're halfway through on yesnetwork.com, why the hell are you going to download it at iTunes? But now you know. You can get it at iTunes as well. But if this tournament is anything like the first play-in game between UNC Asheville and University of Arkansas Little Rock, we're in for a wild ride. Hit a 3 to send it into overtime. And then Asheville goes on to win. Now, their prize, Joe, is to take on Pittsburgh Thursday in the Southeast bracket. Pittsburgh, the number one seed there, of course. And I pretty much think Pitt, if this is the year Pitt does it, this is the year they have to do it. Because I think they drew the I don't want to call any bracket easy, but if you look at all the brackets, in my opinion, I think that's the easiest bracket. St. John's is in the bracket, and I thought if, you know, they were full strength with DJ Kennedy, they could probably take it to Pittsburgh and maybe have some magic and get there as well. But their first round matchup against Gonzaga scares the hell out of me. I don't really think, looking at them and the post presence that Gonzaga has and the scores that they have, I just don't think that they match up well with them. If they get by the Bulldogs, though, I think they could beat Jimmer and BYU and get to the Sweet 16, but I just don't see them beating a team like Florida. So here's my final fours. I have two because I have two, and I'll end it with this. I'm not going to start breaking this down like I'm a college basketball maven because I'm not going to fake something. I just can't. I can never be a car salesman. I'm just going to give you in my gut who I felt makes it to the Final Four. In my Troy Benjamin super yes pool, I have Kentucky. Wow.
With John Cryer.
Wow. Pretty in Pink. Ducky. I was combining Kentucky and Duke there for a second, but Kentucky and Duke I have, and Pittsburgh and Kansas. So I have 3 ones and a 4. Now, people might look at this and go, why do you have 3 ones? You know, doesn't that no, because I think it's just so. Look, this could be, this, you could have an 8 seed in the Final Four this year because of how Jay Billis, who I think is one of the best broadcasters out there in breaking down the tournament. You watch him, the tournament is open. He said, you know, the competition is so close now. I mean, the parity is so big. You don't have a dominant team. So anybody could make it to the Final Four. But I have, in one, I got Kentucky, Duke, Pittsburgh, Kansas. I have a final of Duke, Pitt, with Duke repeating as the national champions. Kyrie Irving, if he comes back into the fold, Krzyzewski said he loves his team right now going into the tournament. They're on a little bit of a winning streak. They got a little moxie heading in. They're the defending champions. You know, they have the biggest bullseye on their back. I don't know how much of a factor Irving will be, but, you know, even if he comes off the bench to help this team out, I don't know. I just have them repeating, and I think it could happen. The other Final Four I have, Ohio State taking on Texas, and I have Duke losing to Texas in the Sweet 16. So Ohio State, Texas with Ohio State winning, and Notre Dame, Pitt with Pitt winning, and I have Ohio State and Pitt in the final, and I have Ohio State as the champ. So two different Final Fours there for you. Those are my feelings. I'm usually pretty good at this. And I'm usually in these pools till the last minute. Having said that, I'll probably be out after the first round with my Final Four teams all taking a collective dump. Because, you know, but even if that happens, I like this tournament either way. If I'm in it the whole way or if I'm out of it. Because if I get some upsets and I'm out of it, it just makes the tournament even more exciting. And I just sit back, crumple up my brackets, and go from there.
All right, Chris. Well, mine's a little different than yours. As you know, I'm a huge Big East fan. But even with that being said, you know, I think looking at the Pittsburgh...
Well, with 11 teams, they better get somebody to the Final Four.
Well, and I'm just saying, you know, you look at, like, Utah State, there's no way that team should be a 12. I'm sorry.
They have 30 wins.
Yeah, there's no way they should be a 12. So, you look at, you know, the Pittsburgh bracket, I agree with you. I think Pittsburgh's got kind of the easiest road. I'm not a huge fan of Florida. I don't think they're that great. I'm also not a huge fan of St. John's and BYU, and I just think that these teams are going to beat up on each other. I don't think BYU makes it far. St. John's has a fighting shot, but so does Gonzaga. That's the thing. So does Gonzaga. So when it all comes, and you know, Michigan State, who was ranked high earlier in the season, you know, they're going to try to, you know, make up for their just awful season, even though they're in the tournament. I have, coming from that bracket, Pittsburgh. I have a one there. Coming from the Southwest, I have Notre Dame. I have Notre Dame beating up on Louisville. I think Louisville's going to beat Kansas, and then Notre Dame beats Louisville to go to the Final Four. I think Ohio State, also another number one. I think they make it, beating Syracuse to get to the Final Four. And I have, in my other bracket, I was going to say Duke, but actually, I think UConn makes it. That's how strong I think the Big East is. So I've got Ohio State, UConn, Pitt, Notre Dame.
Wow.
And when it's all said and done, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish are my champion this year.
That is a true pick from the heart Big East guy right there. I could have went that route too, but I decided to be a little bit more a variety with my picks. I would love to see that happen. That's what I just said. I would love to crumple up my brackets right now and have that happen. I would sign for that right now and, you know, take $40 and throw it down the toilet. Because that, to me, being a Big East fan as well, that would be a hell of a Final Four for me to watch. And the Big East, as you all know, beat the hell out of each other this year. So that's what it came down to me, for me. And I have, in my one Final Four, I have Pitt facing Notre Dame. And to me, that could go either way. But I just think, as I said earlier, and as a lot of people are saying, not just me, if any year, including Dick Vitale, if any year Pitt was going to do it, it's this year.
That's true. It's very true, and it's funny because I have Ohio State being the only team, and then I have Ohio State losing to UConn. I think it's Notre Dame, UConn in the final game, which would be amazing. I think that would be absolutely amazing for this region to watch that game. Kemba Walker is so hot right now. You know, Notre Dame is just, I think they're just a very good team. They easily could have been a number one. Easily could have been a number one. So, who knows? But that's my pick. Notre Dame, UConn, Notre Dame winning.
All right, you heard it here first. I gave you two. Joe gave you one. But that's the way it should be. It should be one, by the way.
Just want to throw this out there. The last major prediction I made at the beginning of the 2010 season was the Green Bay Packers winning the Super Bowl. So just throwing that out.
Over the Ravens.
Okay, well, I was half right, okay? 49ers? Yeah.
Yes, I picked the 49ers. Yes, I did. They almost came back and made the playoffs at 7-9, so I don't want to hear it. Oh, baby. Mike Singletary's a linebacker coach now for... Isn't he the Bears? Isn't it the Bears? Isn't he a linebacker coach for the Bears now?
What is that, the Southampton High School Bears?
Oh, wow. All right. Anyway, that's going to wrap things up here for the Off the Wall podcast. We'll see you next week. God willing, for Joe Auriemma, I'm Chris Sheeran. Thanks for listening.